You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Acrisius must be punished, and his people with him. My Lord Poseidon, I command you to raise the wind and the sea, destroy Argos, and to make certain that no stone stands, that no creature crawls. I command you to let loose the last of the Titans. Let loose the Kraken!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 65 for the 19th of November, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm not bad, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about that? A bit of a classic 1981 clash. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Nothing like Laurence Olivier saying, release the Kraken.
Absolutely.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. This week we are going to review, because of the opening clip, I guess that's kind of, you can guess where we're going. We're going to review the new Sword and Sandals epic, Immortals, by Tarsem Singh. I think that's how you pronounce his name. We're also going to talk a little bit about the new Australian film Burning Man, which I don't believe you've had a chance to see yet, Josh.
No, I missed that one, unfortunately.
I'll give you my opinions. And I really wish Richard was here, by the way, because I don't think Richard liked it as much as me, and it could have got into a fist fight, you know?
Well, you never know. He might come on in the next few weeks and give you a piece of his mind.
Absolutely. There was a lot of confusion, by the way, Josh. I should clarify this. On the site, last week in the show, we actually said we were doing Immortals this week, and we thought we were completely correct on that assumption. And then we realized that we made a big mistake because Robin was supposed to be coming on the show because it's the week that Twilight Breaking Dawn is opening, and it all got very messy. But because of scheduling conflicts, we have decided just to do Immortals this week and just do it. Richard can't join us because he's at the Japanese Film Festival, and Robin is coming on for next week's show. So next week will be the Breaking Dawn episode. So whatever is coming out next week, I apologize, but you know, it's, oh no, that's right, because Immortals is actually coming out next week. So we're just swapping.
Yes, it is.
We're just swapping them around.
We're just jumping the gun on
we're
that.
We're just
one.
Jumping the gun. We have to swap them around, unfortunately. And I, as I said to you the other day, Immortals comes out next week. By the time this podcast comes out, it's only 4 days till it's released, so that's not a problem. And we're not going to make a shred of difference to Breaking Dawn's business.
Oh, no.
No.
Absolutely not. I don't think anything is, because Rotten Tomatoes hasn't exactly been getting good reviews off this film. So,
Any of the Twilight films gotten good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't care.
No. Anyway, back to what I was saying. I'll talk a little bit about Burning Man and tell you what I thought about it. We're also going to explore a little bit of entertainment news, which is very trailer heavy this week. It was a really big week for trailers. We're going to show trailers and talk about trailers for Pixar's new film Brave. I think we can all say that all is forgiven for Cars 2 at this point. We're going to show Mirror Mirror, which is Tarsem Singh's answer to Snow White and the Huntsman, which we showed last week. So the second Snow White film has made its debut in trailer form. And what is probably destined to become the next Twilight series, maybe not in quality, but in popularity, is we have the trailer for the first Hunger Games.
Yes.
As I wrote up on my thing when I put up the trailer, I'm not real familiar with Hunger Games. I haven't read the books. I've kind of missed this hype wagon altogether. But they're all telling me that this is going to be the next big thing. There was a good chance. And then look, the trailer was actually kind of interesting. So we'll have a look at that, and we'll put some comment on that. We also have a brand new list of five, which is five great Sword and Sandals films. Funny that.
Yep.
And interpret that any way you want, by the way. Now, I should just make mention very quickly that we mentioned for the last couple of weeks, we aren't doing the show live at the moment because of work conflicts and schedules and so forth. It is just coming out as a audio podcast for this moment. The live shows may be back next year once we figure out some sort of status quo on schedules. We'll see. But for the moment, we're just going out on iTunes or on our site as an audio show.
Yeah.
All right. Josh, now, have you still been playing computer games or have you got something? What have you been watching?
Well, look, as I said last week, I have managed to get a couple of really, really average films in. Now, I know that sounds weird considering the amount of films that are coming out at the moment. Why would you go back and watch incredibly bad films?
Well, I do it all the time.
Exactly. And more importantly, if anybody knows me, I tend to look towards the crap films anyway, because we need to be able to show balance. And if we saw all of the best movies Hollywood have to offer, then how would we have any scale as to what is bad?
Also, let's face it, they make more bad movies than they make good movies. So you're going to see a few bad movies.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to see some that didn't even hit Hollywood, that just kind of flew right over. And that is exactly where I was this week. So I watched Boogeyman 1, which I had missed originally. This film was a horror film that was produced Sam Raimi's company.
Actually really keen on seeing this when the first trailers came out for it, because it looked interesting. It actually looked kind of spooky, and I never got around to seeing it.
It's kind of sad, because if they had of when you watch the film, its final minutes happen so quickly and so incredibly intensely, that if you're not paying attention, I actually finished it and rewatched the section again, because I was like, so much happened, I'm not quite sure I got my head around it all. But they set up this great antagonist, this character that can continue to come back.
Right.
And essentially, that's what I thought they were going to do with the series. You were going to get a Jason or a Freddy style.
Candyman.
Yeah, like a reoccurring character.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, that would make sense. You'd get the Boogeyman.
Exactly. And number one actually has some really tense moments. It's got some interesting horror elements. It kind of doesn't know what it wants to be, which is probably its biggest problem, is that essentially it has no idea what it's doing.
Yeah, that happens to a lot of horror movies, though, I think.
Yeah, but it manages to tell an above-average storyline, and I got to the end of that, and I'm like, well, all right, I'll watch two. Now, two, well, this is not the film I thought it was going to be. Not only does it pretty much abandon everything the first film does, it also has more red herrings than it does storyline, and just the worst, most uninteresting, annoying cast you can possibly think of. Like, not in a good way either. Just in a really average way.
So worse than the cast of Shark Night, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. Because you've got to remember, these people are all in a mental asylum.
And you've got to think, the cast of Shark Night, actually, they weren't terrible actors. They were just given nothing to do.
Exactly. Whereas in this film, you've got people that are average actors. Not bad actors, just average actors. And then on top of that, you're going to add the other part to the conversation, which is that not only are they annoying as hell, they're all psychologically damaged. So you've got a bunch of really unlikable, uninteresting characters that all have things wrong with them, and then they slowly start getting killed off one by one. And you're supposed to believe it's the Boogeyman, which is understandable considering that they actually fuck the plot up in certain bits. So it seems supernatural, even though there is really no explanation that you can ground it with. And at risk, because I don't want anybody ever watching this film, I'm going to wreck a little bit and say it's not the Boogeyman at the end of the film, which means that the whole idea of bringing it into the series somehow doesn't work. So, yeah, a whole series is wasted. And three isn't much better either. I'm not even going to waste time with that one, though.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Did you watch anything to wash that taste out of your mouth?
I rewatched Frighteners.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Yeah,
and did you watch the director's cut or the original cut?
I'm not sure. It was just the Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray, okay. So, I've got both on DVD. I don't know what's on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, it's probably got both versions, knowing Blu-ray, but I just watched whichever one happened when you press play. So, great.
I like Frighteners.
I do. Mm. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. I mean, partially I think it's because I'm a Kiwi. But the other part, because it was all shot in a small town in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, it's just a really cute horror film, if that's possible. You know?
Well, it's more comedy than horror, but
Man, there's some pretty
freaky stuff.
It's got some
dark ideas in it, but it is more comedy than horror.
Oh, dude, either way, it's brilliant.
It is. It's very cute. It's very clever. And for those who don't know, it's probably the first really mainstream Peter Jackson film.
Yes.
It's kind of the one that
Oh, no, wasn't that after Heavenly Creatures?
It was, but Haven of Heavenly Creatures was the art house darling. It was the critic's darling. And Frighteners kind of, because it was produced by Robert Zemeckis. And so it kind of proved to everybody that he could actually do something like Lord of the Rings. Because I don't think if he hadn't done Frighteners, I don't think he ever would have got Lord of the Rings off the ground.
I agree.
Because up until that point, it was all just indie stuff. Very good indie stuff, but indie stuff. Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. This week, I've actually seen several films this week, but I think there's one in particular I want to talk about, which, of course, is The Burning Man. I actually didn't see it this week, which is kind of cheating, but I do want to say one other that I did watch. I rewatched yesterday, funnily enough, The X-Files I Want to Believe.
Right.
Which is the second X-Files movie, the one that was about the psychic and the snow and the body harvesting, if you remember that one. I don't know if you saw it.
Which film?
It's the one where Scully, it's the one that's set after all of the X-Files.
So
Mulder is in hiding and he's brought back because there's a psychic involved and it's got Billy Connolly in it.
Yeah.
And it got ravaged by the critics when it came out. And I actually wrote on the site, because it was early on in the days of Geek Action when that came out, and I actually wrote on the site, and I'm going to stand by this original statement, which I think if you take Mulder and Scully out of the equation, it is actually a really decent thriller. The problem is that for some reason, and it's obviously because Chris Carter is obsessed by it, and Chris Carter also probably that's how he raised the money, but he needed to make an X-Files movie. And so he's inserted the Mulder and Scully characters into, kind of awkwardly, into this relatively decent thriller. And it's like, if you didn't make it an X-Files movie, I think it would have been really well received as a fairly decent dark thriller. It goes into some pretty dark areas. But they had to make it into an X-Files movie, obviously. So it kind of...
So if I was to watch it and try and pretend that I wasn't following Scully and Mulder,
you'd probably enjoy
would it. I enjoy it?
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. I think you'd sit there and go, that's kind of interesting. Although there's probably a few too many in references to the series because they did make it an X-Files movie. But as I say, at its core, Chris Carter has actually fashioned a fairly decent little thriller. And I sat there watching it going, boy, it's such a shame that he had to be kind of pegged into the X-Files world. If he could have just made a film for the sake of making a film and just made a thriller about two detectives looking for this killer, et cetera, it could have been a really good film. But that being said, I still actually quite enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it more this time around than the first time, because the first time, of course, you've got all those expectations on it.
Sure.
This time around, it was just like, hey, it's just what it is. So, yeah, and I mean, I also saw Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen film, finally, which I really enjoyed. Let me just tell you, I think it's a really, really clever, sweet film. But the big one this week, because it actually opened on Thursday, I think we need to talk about Burning Man. Now, The Burning Man is written and directed by Jonathan Teplitsky. It stars Matthew Goode, Bojana Novakovic, Essie Davis, Rachel Griffiths, Carrie Fox, Anthony Hayes, and Kate Behan. And for our American listeners, you're probably going, who the hell are all those people? Because they're all Australian actors, except for Matthew Goode, who you'd recognize as Ozymandias from The Watchmen. And Bojana Novakovic, you probably know because she's got a bit of profile and say she was recently in Devil. She was the brunette in the elevator. And Kate Behan was that very strange girl with the big eyes in Flight Plan.
Don't talk to me about that film.
No, that's not a good film. Anyway, Jonathan Teplitsky, if you go to geekactually.com, you'll actually find, I got a chance to interview Jonathan Teplitsky and Bojana Novakovic in a sit-down video interview, and it's very, very interesting because he talks about the script and so forth. I'm going to read you a synopsis here, which is the official synopsis for the film, but it doesn't do the film justice. So I'm going to read it to you really quickly because you can pretty much forget most of it. Burning Man is the reckless, sexy, funny, moving, and ultimately life-affirming story of Tom, a British chef in a Bondi restaurant who seems to have decided there are no longer any rules he needs to obey. Whatever Tom is up to, his actions seem to be tolerated by those around him. As Tom descends into darkness, fragments of a different story begin to emerge. All the women in his world are trying in their own very different ways to help him put his life back together. And I do have a little bit of a trailer, which we'll play in a second. We won't play the whole trailer because it's actually fairly long, but we'll play a little portion of it. I just want to say that description really doesn't describe the film very well, but here's the really tricky part. You can't really give a full plot synopsis on this without spoiling the film. Because one of the joys of this film is that the first 30 minutes of the film is not what you think it is. And so, in fact, Bojana Novakovic actually talks about this in the interview. She says that she actually, when she read the script for the film, was in the bath and was actually getting physically mad at the film because he was such a shit. And it was like, why is he getting such a pass? Why are all these people treating him so nicely? And all this, and everything I just read in that description basically happens in the first 30 minutes. And you sit there going, this man is just an asshole. What's going on? What you start to realize, and she said when the turning point came in the film, about the 30-minute mark, she dropped her script into the bath and immediately fell in love with this film. And I think that's what's going to happen with most people who see it, because there is a turning point where you actually realize, and all I'm going to say without spoiling anything, is that the film is actually written in a fragmented form. Now, Josh, I know you're a fan of these kind of scripts. This is a really, really good script. What Teplitsky has written is basically a life for the first 30 minutes in particular, and it's the rest of the whole film is structured like this, where it's almost like he took a film, told a straightforward story, took a pair of scissors and just chopped it into little pieces and then threw it all up in the air, and however it all came down is how he put it back together.
Wow.
Now, it's not quite that. It's not quite that anarchic. But
it sounds like it's a bit more intelligent than that.
It is a little bit more intelligent than that. And what's really amazing is that Jonathan Teplitsky actually says in his interview that he didn't actually write it in that form. He wrote it in the fragmented state right off the top of his head. And that is really, once you see this film, you'll know that that's quite a feat. Because he manages to tie. So by the time you've got to the end of the movie, you can actually see the linear story. But you have to go through all these bends and twists. And the reason it's like that is because his life is in such turmoil. He is in such an emotional state that it's like his life is broken. And that's what you're experiencing. You're experiencing that free fall through basically emotional depression. Oh. And it's about him trying to piece his life back together again. And it's not what you think. It's really hard to talk about it without spoilers, because this film, I will say that it actually touched me on a very emotional level. And I can't believe these words that are actually going to come out of my mouth, but it may actually be the first time that an Australian film actually makes one of my top five films of the year. It is a remarkable.
I've been told this by several people before we actually got round to that, so it's good to hear that you liked it too.
I thought it was terrific. I thought the performances were amazing. I'm still mesmerized by his script, and let me just tell you, the cinematography in this film is gorgeous. Let me just show a little bit of the trailer, which you'll get an idea of the structure of it from this trailer, because even the trailer is disjointed. So let's have a little listen to this.
When it's your turn, will you come and find me?
Suggesting that there's some sort of an attraction going on here.
Yeah, there's an attraction. Be careful that you don't go so far out that you can't find your way back.
I'm going to just say, go see this trailer. You can find it at geekactually.com. And you'll it's got some beautiful imagery. Especially, you heard all that smashing. That was actually his car being smashed. And it's an amazing accident. Because that's actually early on in the film. And then it's almost like you're piecing together. It's almost like it's his life flashing before his eyes. I'll tell you right now, I didn't spoil anything because it's not. All right?
Yeah.
But that's the structure. You know how that kind of weird structure that can happen. Matthew Goode, who I actually thought was a little wooden in The Watchmen, is like a raw nerve in this film. He is fantastic. And I think Bojana Novakovic has a really amazing career ahead of her if she can just keep picking the right things, because she is a strong actress who is very pretty as well. She just needs to make sure she doesn't get sucked into doing too many things like Devil.
Yeah.
You know? Now, the one thing I do want to say about this film is it's also kind of refreshing. We actually had to talk about this on the show some time ago about the concept of casual nudity. And we talked about how it's something we don't have in cinema today. It's a very 80s thing. This film has a lot of casual nudity. It's actually a question I wanted to get out in the interview, but we ran out of time, unfortunately. But it's just very natural. Everybody is just getting it on in one way or another. And it really is remarkably frank in its sexuality. So if that is going to offend you, just be aware that that is the case.
Okay? Wow.
I didn't find it offensive at all, just to let you know. But I do recommend it highly. This is well worth your cinema dollars. Now, the reason why I wanted Richard to be here was I just read his review on therealbits.com, and he didn't like it so much. He actually says, his review says, wait for DVD.
Jesus.
I know. I'm going to have words with him next time he's on the show. So, yes. There you go. That's what I think about Burning Man. Let's move on to a feature review. What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
And Josh, I expect you to go see it.
Yeah, I will, man.
Yeah, well worth seeing. All right, so our feature film review is Immortals, directed by Tarsem Singh and written by Charlie and Vlas. Now, this is going to be a good one. Parlapanides, I think it is. It stars Henry Cavill, Superman, Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke.
Whiplash. Frida Pinto, Slumdog Millionaire girlfriend. Stephen Dorff. Blade's bad guy, and John Hurt in everything.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. Ollivander the Wandmaker. There you go. Theseus is a mortal man chosen by Zeus to lead the fight against a ruthless king, Hyperion, who is on a rampage across Greece to obtain a weapon that can destroy humanity. That's about as quick a synopsis as I could find for you.
It's the kind of synopsis you want out of a Greek movie like this.
Absolutely.
You know, like a...
That's straight from IMDb, by the way. I'm sure there's a big, long, convoluted one out there, but that pretty much sums up the story.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we're going to come back and discuss this, because I think there's a lot to discuss. Here we go. Here's Immortals.
Long before man roamed these lands, there was a war in heaven. The victors declared themselves gods, while the vanquished were renamed Titans and forever imprisoned within the bowels of Mount Tartarus. King Hyperion and his legions seek to unleash the Titans and wage war upon this world.
I will end the reign of the gods.
If there is one human who could lead them against Hyperion, it would be Theseus. I have faith in you. Prove me right.
I don't know if I can do what Zeus asks of me, but you can see the future.
I cannot change the future.
And the rest goes on with lots of big battle scenes. So,
oh man, that's my favorite part.
Yes, but the listeners can't see it all. So, so we'll move on from there, because the rest is just very noisy. Lots of people going thwack.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, what did you think of Immortals?
It's an interesting one, man, because it's like I think 300, because of its initial visual style and stuff like that. I immediately go to that sort of a place when I see a film like this. And I'm like, there's a lot of comparisons to be made. It uses that slow motion technique. It has guys jumping off things and throwing stuff at other people. Like, there's a lot of techniques used in this film that we have seen before. But the scale is so much more epic than 300. It's not all in a small area. It's kind of this giant war battle. There's gods involved. You know, it's taking what is three. It's almost like a spiritual sequel, if you will. Like a whole bunch of new people running around doing a similar kind of a world. It's shot very similar in the
like,
fact that it's
kind of like 300 and Clash of the Titans had sex and this is the baby.
Exactly. You know? But, you know, most of whatever genes were in Clash of the Titans were left behind. But, yeah, no, look, dude, the more I think about it, the more I actually kind of enjoy this. Like, it's the kind of stupid fun film that I have to give a pass. Because even if there are things that I have a problem with and there are a few things that I'm like, okay, that was a bit silly. God, if it wasn't a whole lot of fun, I don't know what it was, man.
Well, look, I think you're right. I think the film was kind of fun. I didn't hate it, but I think the film has an amazing visual style. But the problem that I have with Taras M. Singh as a filmmaker is that I don't think he's actually a particularly brilliant filmmaker. I think he is a great visualist who comes up with great ideas and looks and spends a lot of time making things look as pretty as he can. But I don't think he's a good storyteller. And I think this is, I mean, I haven't seen The Fall, which was supposed to be very good, which I haven't seen, but I did see The Cell, and I have seen this. And I just look at, and they both suffer exactly the same problem. They both are visually splendid looking films that both have terrible scripts and don't tell very good stories. And so I wonder with Taras M. Singh whether, I mean, this is a man who I feel like should be making television commercials. Because he's a visualist. He does everything in visual style. That being said...
Oh, dude, or just have him as someone that's in control of just the visual aspect of the film. Leave the story writing to someone else.
Absolutely. You know, because he doesn't tell good stories. I mean, he's not a good storyteller, I should say. He tells good stories. He's not a good storyteller. And I mean, you know, bag what you want about George Lucas. George Lucas can at least spin a good yarn. You know what I mean? He can at least spin a good story. He may not be a good filmmaker, but he could spin a good story. Whereas,
still going to disagree with that, but anyway.
Well, think about it. Story to Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Star Wars. You know, I mean, the man is contributed.
No, Star Wars, I'm not going to give him a pass for that one. The last three and then the new Indiana Jones, dude, nah.
All right, but you've got six films prior to that would say that he is a good storyteller.
Exactly.
And so, because he's got three Indiana Jones and three Star Wars prior to that, the man is actually known as being a good storyteller. He can't form the story. He needs a screenwriter to do that. But this isn't about George Lucas. This is about Taras M. Singh. I think we're in the same situation. I don't think he's a good storyteller. I don't think he's a good judge of performance. I mean, in this film, aside from Mickey Rourke, the performances are pretty average. You know what I mean? It's like Henry Cavill is doing what Henry Cavill does, and I think he will make a good Superman, by the way.
Yeah.
I think he's got the right presence for Superman. But I don't think he's doing an exceptional job of emoting and bringing forth the emotions needed in a man who is conflicted in the world between gods and humans. No, he just looks like he's, you know, flexing his muscles.
Yeah, no, agreed. You know?
And Frida Pinto, who I do really like, sleepwalks through this film.
She really does. She is very attractive, though.
She is very attractive. But
like, let's just stop and take that in for a minute. She is... fucking gorgeous.
Yes, she is. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Absolutely. But the one performance that really stood out in this was Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke was having a field day. He was having such a fun time. You know, and he had presence and he had delivery. And you sit there and you go, yeah, no, you're doing very well. I also quite like the guy who played Zeus, who I didn't put in the credits, funnily enough. I didn't put any of the gods in the credits, funnily enough. Yeah. What's his name? I should have IMDb up here, shouldn't I? It's something Luke something. Oh my god, my mind is going to jelly. Anyway, the bottom line is that I think Taras M. Singh did a really, really splendid job visually, and the 3D worked really well. And I thought, you know, visually, it's a stunning looking film. Battles were great. Special effects were really clever. I had a problem with the god's helmets, but that's a Tarsum thing. He likes big weird hats. I just felt overall, I was left at the end of it. You know, when you finish a movie sometimes and you just go, what the fuck was that? That's kind of how I felt at the end of Immortals.
Yeah, no,
Luke Evans is the one I was thinking of. Luke Evans is Zeus.
Yeah, look, it's generally there are scenes that I think they did really well, and like you said, I think that Mickey Rourke was playing not only a really good character, but between the two people, between him and just some of the things he does throughout the film, and I mean that is kind of writing. Like, some of the story writing is really good. Like, there's a traitor in the film, and the reactions and the way that the character interaction between him and Mickey Rourke's character play out. Like, it's almost like the overarching storyline is the only problem I have with this film. It's like it should have been, like, three movies.
Yeah, on a scene-by-scene.
And they've just tried to compact it too much.
On a scene-by-scene basis, there's some nice writing in the script. But once again, though, if you had anybody else other than Mickey Rourke delivering those lines, it may not have worked. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Mickey Rourke just chewed it up. I mean, he was just doing such a good job. He did a much better job than he did as Whiplash, and I thought he was really good as Whiplash. So, he's just – Mickey Rourke has a presence, and that presence is really felt. The problem is nobody else in this film seems to have the same presence.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue. This film has structurally some very, very strange pieces in it, like when the – I don't want to spoil anything, but like when the four oracles are being held at that little – enclosure in the middle of nowhere. And what is this world that Tarsem has created? There doesn't seem to be anybody around.
Well, so what's just wrong with that?
It's just very odd. Did you notice that there was like these little structures in the middle of nowhere?
I actually really
nothing.
Dug that, because it's kind of like it was nice that it wasn't all it was a very different, it was a very sparse world. Like, it was almost like things had been wiped clean by this massing army, and there was very little left apart from the destruction that they had waged across the world. It's like, it was such an interesting experience to see these nothingness kind of locations and very sparse, you know, like not too many people. They were keeping it really controlled, very small. It was like that, and it allowed for these really interesting visual locations, which was one of the things I thought they did so well.
Yeah, I mean, like the village built into the side of a mountain and stuff like that. I mean, it doesn't make any logical sense, but it was cool. It was pretty.
Logic's
overrated. Who needs logic?
Logic in a film like this is kind of like a counterpoint. It's like giant worlds, everybody carries weapons, gods, logic? Fuck logic.
I gotta
Logic's
say,
a waste of time.
Here's a really interesting point for you, Josh, and this is going to be somewhat controversial, I know. But there are actually elements of Clash of the Titans that I liked more than this. And there are elements of this I liked much more than Clash of the Titans. Overall, this works better than Clash of the Titans.
Definitely.
But, I mean, there are elements in Clash of the Titans where you sit there and go, like the scorpion fight, for instance, where you go, that's actually a pretty good sequence. You know what I mean? Mm. And as much as the fact that it was overly CG, the Medusa sequence was actually kind of cute. I hated everything building up to it and everything after it. But, you know, that sequence was kind of cute. This film... overall, because it's so, you know, it's like a fashion parade, and it's so pretty, and it's so overproduction designed, and it's so overdesigned in general, that I was left feeling kind of hollow at the end of it. And I think there's a problem there if you're left kind of hollow. You kind of feel like you've been looking at a painting in a gallery that hasn't quite worked. You know, you know. I don't know. I'm maybe a little bit overly harsh. I actually do like it more than I did when I actually watched it, and that is actually something.
That's weird. That happened to me too.
Yeah, when I actually walked out of the cinema, I really did not like it. Mm. And the next day, I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, if I'm thinking about it, there's something there.
Mm.
And I've been thinking about it for the better part of a couple of days now, and. I actually do like it more than I thought I did. Mm. It grows on you. There's something about it. It kind of seeps into you, but it doesn't grow enough.
Maybe what it is that when you distance yourself from it a bit, you actually get enough time to kind of see it as the overall thing, as opposed to when you are nitpicking it like a film, you all of a sudden start looking at lack of you know, important dialogue in scenes or how quickly they move between locations. It's like... it's almost like Conan the Barbarian I actually trashed completely, but when I look back, I have all these fond memories for it, and I don't know why, because I absolutely hated that film when I watched it.
Hey, do you know funny? I actually like Clash of the Titans more than I like Conan the Barbarian. And let's not forget, I trashed Clash of the Titans. You know what I mean?
Yes, you did.
But it's funny because now that we've had something to compare it with, it's not looking so bad when you compare it to some other stuff. Anyway, let's put a bow on this thing. Josh, do you recommend this to people?
Yeah, there's a lot of people I would, actually. Any of my friends that are kind of from the western suburbs, and I don't mean that with any ill intent, these people like things like this. They like big, massive blockbuster action and stuff like that. For my friends that aren't into art house films, for my friends that don't want unnecessary love and romance, people that just want to go in there and watch shit get attacked and blood and violence, absolutely. For anyone that likes Spartacus, which I thought was a fucking terrible series, if you liked it, go watch this. You'll probably really enjoy it.
We should make mention of that, shouldn't we? That this film is incredibly violent in places.
Oh, yeah.
Man, we're talking like brutal, brutal gore. But not all the way through. It's a really strange mix.
Yeah, I liked it.
No, that part I quite liked.
Really liked.
I liked all the slow motion exploding heads and stuff. I thought that was kind of
absolutely
cool.
The way it should happen.
All right, look, I'm gonna kind of agree with you. Look, this is a really hard one because I actually don't think it is a particularly brilliant film. But there is a certain group of people out there, if you are really into visual design, if you're really into, you know, looking at things for the visual aspect of it, this film is remarkable to look at. It's a work of art in that sense. If you want a story, if you actually want a film that'll carry you through and really grip you, this is not the film for you. So it's a really hard call because it's not terrible. But had it not been as pretty as it was, I would have said watch it on DVD. But it is something that, because of its visual design, you might want to see it in 3D at the cinema, just because it looks sensational. And that's a very tiresome thing. So if you are a fan of Tarsem Singh, see, I don't know, what was your opinion on The Cell, Josh?
On the what, sir?
The Cell, the Jennifer Lopez film.
I actually kind of liked it.
Okay, so if you were to compare this to The Cell?
Oh, no, dude, he's grown a lot since then. Like, when I say I liked it, it's a trash film. Like, there's a lot wrong with it, man. And it's also, it's kind of like he's learned a lot. He's probably done a lot of research about the subject matter to get it to what it is in the film. But the problem is it comes through as someone that's been doing a lot of research.
Yeah.
Like everything that he's answering for the viewer, he's kind of answering for himself as well.
Yep.
So it's a very silly film at times. And it's also a little bit see-through in the fact that it's not as deep as it wants to be. And I think that he's grown a lot since then, but there are still a lot of problems that he had in that film that are also are very apparent in this film as well.
I wasn't a huge fan of The Cell. I thought it tried way too hard.
No, but that's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he has progressed a lot since then as a filmmaker. And I think Immortals flows a little bit more easily than The Cell does, but it still has some very similar structural issues.
Yeah.
So which comes down to that, I don't think he's a very good storyteller.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are a fan of The Cell and you thought The Cell was the best thing ever, you might really like Immortals. So
yeah.
There you go. It's one way of looking at it. All right, let's move on. What do you reckon? We're going to swap the order here, Josh, because I figure things as we're talking about Tarsem Singh, let's just throw Mirror Mirror right up to the top. What do you think?
Absolutely.
A new trailer came out. Last week we talked about Snow White and the Huntsman, which was the first of the Snow White films to come out. And actually, you got to make a correction here. Last week I actually said that the thing I didn't like about Snow White and the Huntsman was there was no dwarves. Remember, there's no seven dwarves?
Yeah.
Apparently there are. We just don't see them. We just don't see them in the trailer. And one of the reasons is they may not be finished yet because they will be in effect. Because I'm just looking here, all of the dwarves are actually played by full-size actors. So the dwarves are going to be played by people like, are you ready for these names? Ray Winston, Nick Frost, Ian McShane, Eddie Marzan, Bob Hoskins.
Good Lord.
I know. So Snow White and the Huntsman is going to have some power dwarves, let me tell you. just to let you know that the seven dwarves do exist in the Snow White and the Huntsman film. However, there was a competing Snow White film, which is also directed by Tarsem Singh, who directed The Immortals. And this week, about 5 days after the trailer for Snow White and the Huntsman came out, they launched the trailer for the newly titled, because it didn't have a title up until then, Mirror Mirror, which is his Snow White film. And it kind of didn't go out the way that I think they wanted it to, because there's been a lot of hate poured on this thing. Let's have a look at this real quick, and we'll come back and talk about it, okay? Because I really want to talk, because I've got a couple ideas about this. Hold on a minute. Here it is. Mirror, mirror.
Let's do it.
Once upon a time, in an enchanted kingdom, there was a beautiful princess. With skin as white as snow and hair as black as night.
Blah, blah, blah.
Her hair is not black, it's raven, and she's 18 years old, and her skin has never seen the sun, so of course it's good.
This spring.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all?
Snow White.
What?
What?
Snow White.
Ugh.
A classic tale.
Do you want to hear it?
Gets a new wrinkle.
They're not wrinkles. They're just crinkles.
Banish her to the woods.
Is it done?
Just as you instructed.
I'm impressed. You're not as pathetic and wimpy as I have always believed.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
You're invited to discover.
The prince is rich. I'm going to marry him, and then my financial problems will be solved.
An untold adventure.
Organize a ball. We are going to sweep this kid off his feet.
Of romance.
I think Snow White is the most beautiful woman in the whole world.
Agreed to disagree.
Mystery.
Who are you?
Snow White.
Snow who?
No way!
Power.
This doesn't fit.
Well, you must have shrunk it, cinch me up.
I knew I was the same size.
And magic.
I'm gonna use the love potion.
Puppy love. What am I supposed to do with a puppy?
You can rub my tummy.
Fetch!
Queen is getting married.
Take back your kingdom.
I read so many stories where the prince saves the princess. It's time we change that ending.
You're with the bandits?
You're with the queen.
Should we help her?
She's doing pretty good on her own.
If you aren't trying to stab me right now, I might be tempted to kiss you.
The bandit's leader is a she.
Bandit's leader is Snow White.
Who feels like crashing a wedding?
And here I was having such a good day.
Everyone has magic within them.
Yes.
I definitely have a happily ever after thing going on.
Mirror, mirror.
Anyone know how to break a spell?
Say hello to my little friend.
Yeah! Experience the untold adventures of Snow White.
Can I tell you right off the bat, Josh, that I actually buy Lily Cole as the fairest in the land more than I buy Kristen Stewart?
What?
Well, Kristen Stewart is Snow White in Snow White and the Huntsman, right?
Mm.
And Lily Cole is Snow White in this. I buy Lily Cole as the fairest in the land much more than I buy Kristen Stewart.
Yeah.
All right. So, first of all, opinions. What did you think of this thing?
Look, I agree with you, Dave. I think that it's meant for a different audience, and you can pick that up really by the trailer itself. It's like this isn't a dark, horrible kind of a blood fest, which is what I assume people expected from him.
Mm.
This is a kid's film.
Absolutely.
No question about it. Like, you look at the jokes are very young teenage to young person kind of jokes. The dialogue is good. It's snappy. It's quick. It's the kind of thing, like, this seems like a really good family film to me. Like, you've got dialogue that actually makes me smirk, but makes me smirk in that really intelligent way where it's like the queen is a bitchy queen mother, and that's what she's doing.
And Julia Roberts is comedically fine. She's doing okay. Somebody actually wrote in a review, oh, it's fine until Julia Roberts opened her mouth. It's like she's doing fine as the Wicked Witch, you know? She's having fun with it. As I spoke to you about before we started this show today, I just feel like, quite frankly, Tarsem Singh offended the fans by not making what they expected. And because of that, doesn't matter if this film is good or bad now. It makes no difference. If this film was the best film ever made, they would still hate it. Because he dared to go and make a family film when they wanted something dark. And I think that a lot of people have gone to going, what the hell is this? What are we watching? Rather than going, oh, look, he's made a family film. You know, and I think I think that he has just really offended people with this, and it's bizarre because even Richard on The Real Bits basically said, you know, I can't believe what I'm seeing. This is garbage, blah blah blah. And it's like, and I kind of looked at it going, I'm not sure what audience people thought this was going for. I watched this trailer with my wife and son, and they both laughed, and at the end of it said, that looks like fun, and they hated the look of Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah.
You know, because this looks like it's appealing to exactly the same audience that went to see Enchanted, the one with Amy Adams, where the fairy tale princess comes into the modern world, which was a very fun film. And I think this is aimed at exactly the same audience. So I think it looks kind of fun. It's not brilliant. I don't think it looks like it's going to be a masterpiece. I don't know. This is so early yet. We don't know. It's got a lot of visual flair. Once again, Tarsem Singh can't make a film without visual flair. And it looks like it's got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So I look at it, and as my wife pointed out, my lovely wife Katie goes, well, it looks closer to the fairy tale. You know, it's like she doesn't like the idea of Snow White being a battle maiden, you know, with armor.
No, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's like, I mean, I'll watch it for the curious sake, but like I kind of understand why people are kind of like, it just doesn't sound like the kind of concept. Like it's like out of all the stories you could have made into a battle worthy, hard ass kind of a story. Sorry, what was that?
Not Snow White.
Exactly. It just it's definitely not the story I would have seen there. And it's not like I'm saying it's a bad thing. I'm just kind of like, eh. You know, it's just, it doesn't jump at me. That's all.
So, I I'm going to keep my eyes on this mirror. I think it could actually be quite a pleasant, fun family film, as long as that's exactly what you're taking it as.
Yeah.
So, but I'm glad you feel the same way, because I was afraid that we were going to have to get into words. Nah. All right. Last week we reported that Billy Crystal was returning to the Oscars. Good. Yay.
Yes.
This week we got confirmation Ricky Gervais will be back to host the Golden Globes for a third time. Which is fantastic news, because after his last one, there was a lot of doubt that he would come back because it looked like he had offended everybody. So they brought him back to offend people again. Fantastic. I'm so happy. And just to really, like, drive a stake through what is already a bad idea. Kristen Stewart is apparently in final negotiations for a role in Akira, the live action version.
God. As who?
Kay.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she was a bit of a cold bitch, but...
Is it K or Key? K-E-I. I think it's Key.
Yeah. She was a bit of a cold bitch, but even so, ugh.
Yeah, no.
Like, I mean... I don't know. I mean, I've softened on this. When I first heard it, I was like, fuck that. But then there's a part of me that's kind of like, look, she's not playing a role that has that much depth in it anyway. She's only there to stand there. And like, I mean, this is her character. She's kind of like, she's a bit battle worn, but she's really kind of like not really into that much of the, like she's not very personable. It's like the main character kind of follows her because he's just interested in because she's hot, and that kind of does fit her persona.
Now, this follows the news, by the way, that Garrett Hedlund has been cast as Kaneda.
Yeah.
Who is also somebody who doesn't have much of a personality. Not Kaneda, Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah.
He was the star of Tron Legacy, for those who didn't catch the name. And Gary Oldman will play the Colonel.
Which I could totally buy.
I can dig that. Yeah, that's fine.
But, you know, I could watch him in anything, so it doesn't seem like a fair, you know,
yeah, that's thing. True. That's true. I don't know. Garrett Hedlund and Kristen Stewart on screen together could just be too much of a singularity. I think we may just create a black hole.
Cinemas everywhere just collapse in on themselves.
A personality vacuum. It may just form, and the whole thing just collapses. So, I don't know. They may have to think about that. We also got this week a full trailer for The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Now, as I said at the head of the show, I wasn't real familiar with The Hunger Games, but it seems that everybody is talking about it. Every time I go to events or screenings, people keep talking about the latest Hunger Games news, the latest Hunger Games casting, the latest Hunger... And it's like, really? Is it that big a series of books? Problem is, my son's not a teenager yet, so obviously we haven't hit that generation. But apparently the series of books are huge. We're talking like, you know, the latest teen, like, you know, Twilight type size phenomenon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So it's not soppy romance, though. This is an action series, but apparently it's huge amongst the teens, the young teens. Mm. And the first film is now nearing completion. I think it's coming out in March. So they finally released a trailer, and it's got, I'll give this film a little bit of latitude because it actually has Jennifer Lawrence as the star, and I really like Jennifer Lawrence. If you haven't seen Winter's Bone yet, she was also Mystique in X-Men First Class, but Winter's Bone, she was fantastic. So let's have a look at the Hunger Games trailer, and then you can tell me what you think about this strange little anomaly.
Let's do it.
We could do it, you know, take off, live in the woods.
They'd catch us.
Well, maybe not.
We wouldn't make it 5 miles.
Welcome, welcome. The time has come to select one courageous young man and woman for the honor of representing District 12 in the 74th annual Hunger Games.
It's your first year, Prim. Your name's only been in there once. They're not gonna pick you.
Primrose Everdeen.
Prim! The volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
Our tributes, Peter Mullark and Katniss Everdeen.
They just want a good show. That's all they want.
There's 24 of us, Gail. Only one comes out. So you're here to make me look pretty?
I'm here to help you make an impression.
And so it was decreed that each year, the 12 districts of Pen M shall offer up in tribute one young man and woman between the ages of 12 and 18 to be trained in the art of survival and to be prepared to fight to the death.
This is the time to show them everything. Make sure they remember you.
I just keep wishing that I could think of a way to show them that they don't own me. If I'm gonna die, I want to still be me.
I just can't afford to think like that.
Well, I don't know the series of books at all, but I think that film actually looks kind of entertaining.
Dude, it looks more than entertaining. I'm hella excited for that. I don't know anything about the series, right?
Yep.
But if there's one thing I adore more than anything, it's something with a decent, very simple undertone in it when you're doing a series of films, especially if they're apparently quote-unquote epic, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, what I love more than anything is when you get a series which is following kind of basically the concept these people are being forced to do what they're forced to do, and the concept of individuality and stuff like that. It's like all these sort of things are kind of like this story is kind of part Ender's Game, part, I don't know, I would almost say, what was it I had just then?
There was a little bit of Hard Target rolled in there.
Well, no, it's not a Hard Target. For me, it's part Hunger Games, part Running Man.
Yeah, well, I would say there's Running Man, there's Hard Target, there's Turkey Shoot, the Australian film. You know, that whole concept of hunting humans for, well, in this case, it's for survival, and in those films, it's often for sport. There's a really compelling adventure film in there, which is why we keep trying to make films and write stories about that sort of idea, because humans have an amazing capacity of survival. And I think it could be a very interesting film. The only thing that worries me about it, of course, is it's probably going to be PG-13 and watered right down. because it will be for a teen market. But that's okay.
It doesn't have to be about violence. That's the thing. It's more about the struggle of these people being pushed into this situation. Look, there's one worry, which is that it could follow the usual teen system, which we're seeing now, which is that not only is it watered down, but your message is lost in essentially trying to make it cool.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I worry about. Like, that's what I'm worried about more than anything.
I actually think I have to pick up and read one of these books before March.
Absolutely.
I think I'm going to try and find The Hunger Games, the first book, and try and read it before March. They're young adult fiction, so they shouldn't be hard to read. Should be able to, should be able to polish one off pretty fast.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Well, I might have to have a look at that. I'm also thinking I should probably try and get Nicholas to read one. He's kind of the right demographic for it.
Definitely.
See how it goes. All right. So now just a reminder that all the trailers that we have shown today on this show or we have played for you in the audio show, you can find at geekactually.com. We've got all of these embedded. We've been busy this week getting them all on there for you. So they're all in one place. Now, I am not the biggest player of games, as you know. I like a good VG game, but I don't play enough of them. But one of the great ones that you put onto me, and I actually played a bit of, I didn't get a chance to finish it, was BioShock. Mm-hmm. And we talked about for a long time, a couple of years back, or actually even up to last year, the fact that they were trying to make a BioShock movie. And it's interesting because it's kind of gone on hold again. And the creator of BioShock, Ken Levine, has basically now come out with an interview saying, yeah, there's no need to make a movie.
I agree. Always have.
And he basically said, you know, and his quote is, "We got very close to having it get made. We had a deal in place and a director, but for us, there's no burning desire to have a movie made just to get it made. For us and for Take-Two, it's really got to be something that will A, give the fans something they want, and B, for those who don't know BioShock, really introduce them to something that is consistent with the game. And is it going to be a good representation of the game? There are differences between games and movies, no doubt, but the movie has to draw from the same DNA in terms of the world and the story beats. But you know, we don't have to. We don't have a need to get it made.
It doesn't need to exist.
Absolutely, and that's the most. It's the most mature thing I've ever heard about video game adaptations to film.
Exactly, and basically, they're just waiting for someone to come along
who really gets it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I can totally understand that.
Because there seems to be this burning need at the moment to make all of these video game movies, and yet the concept always comes down to we need to change it and adapt it for screen and make it something that it isn't. And you sort of go, well, if you're not going to make the game, then what's the point in making the movie? You're only going to – I mean, let's talk Max Payne and Super Mario Brothers and all this other crap that gets made, because you sit there and go, because you're not capturing the spirit of the game. You know, and so I think this is really very mature of them to say, look, you know, unless you're going to do BioShock the way we want BioShock done, then there's no need. The game,
exactly.
The games stand on their own. That's all there is to it.
I really wish to God that people would understand this, like that people would just get the concept that you don't have to do this. Like, you don't have to make it happen. It's like everybody's so obsessed with making these things a reality that they forget that sometimes if it doesn't work, it can be detrimental to the series. It's like, I've always said with video game movies, any movie you want to try and make, I'm fine with it. That's cool. But if you're not going to do it well, we don't, I'm not in a hurry.
Absolutely. Like, and like, I was talking to my son the other day and he read this thing online about the Mass Effect movie. And the fact that they're still pushing ahead with the Mass Effect movie. And he said, are you excited about that? Because he knows I'm a big Mass Effect fan. I said, I'm actually not excited about it. I don't actually think I want a movie of Mass Effect. And it's because Mass Effect already tells such an amazing story that we've already gone through.
What is it missing?
There's like, there's nothing that they can do on screen that would do justice to what I've already played. You know? And so I look and go, I don't think I do want a Mass Effect movie. Because what movie would you make?
You know? Yeah.
And that's the big problem. So yeah, I think I actually think video games and movies are so different. I just think they should just leave that. That's a particular market that doesn't seem to adapt well. Leave it alone. There's other things to adapt, you know?
Yeah.
All right, let's finish off news with the trailer for Pixar's Brave. Now, we showed the teaser for this back when we were doing live shows about 6 months ago. And it just blew our socks off. And we basically went, yay, Pixar's back. We all know that I hated Cars 2 with a passion. And I was really hoping that Brave would be their return to form. Mm. Now, I think you made a very interesting observation about this trailer, which was that it's actually not a particularly good trailer.
Yeah.
Let's play it and we'll talk about that.
I saw something that day. Something I'll not forget. It stands 12 feet tall, with razor-sharp claws. His hide littered with the weapons of fallen warriors. His face scarred with one dead eye. A Duma sword and...
Chomp! Dad's leg was clean off!
Oh, that's my favorite part!
In accordance with our laws, the firstborn of each of the great leaders must prove their worth. Merida, stop!
A lady enjoys elegant pursuits.
I present my only son. He took out a whole armada single-handedly. With one arm, he was steering the ship.
I want my freedom. But are you willing to pay the price your freedom will cost?
Careful what you wish for, my mother would say.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah! No more fighting! Show a little decorum!
Feast your eyes!
If you had the chance to change your fate, would you?
See, now, I think that's a terrible trailer.
Okay, explain.
Look, my problem with it is, quite simply, that as a trailer, it doesn't do anything. It's like, it starts off telling a story and then just starts just throwing scenes at you. It's just like, funny moment, not funny moment, big giant thing, show you this, show you that. Dialogue that doesn't fit the rest of the trailer. It's like, it's a fucking awful trailer. It looks beautiful, and I imagine the storyline's going to be good. But again, I will point out, I said the same thing about Up's trailer.
True.
I thought Up had a shit trailer.
Yeah, actually, Pixar's first round of trailers often don't work very well. But no. They all look so beautiful that we get suckered into it anyway. Look, I agree with you. I think the structure of that trailer is terrible. I think it can't decide whether the trailer wants to be funny or tell an adventure story. And in between all these epic scope adventure shots of her climbing mountains, we've got guys flipping up their kilts, which is just a bizarre shot in itself. But overall feeling is, I can't wait to see this movie. Looks fantastic. I mean, it's just the hair and the character work and it just looks beautiful, you know?
Mm.
I love the way they've done her hair, that matte mop of red, flaming red hair. It's just fantastic. Pixar's always done hair well, though.
Yes.
So
very true.
It looks like a lot of fun, and you got to love the accents. Not since How to Train Your Dragon have we had that many Scottish accents in one place. I think we could be saying in June all is forgiven for Cars 2. Hopefully that's what we're hoping for. Okay, let's do a list of five. Where's my list of five? My list of five is hiding on me. There's my list of five. Okay, our list of five this week is five great Sword and Sandals movies, or Sword and Sandals films, depending on which way you want to go. Clashing swords, mythical gods, half-clad damsels, buff heroes. What's not to like, Josh?
Well, there are some things.
There are, yes.
Circa Clash of the Titans.
Well, yeah, okay, there are some things. Now, when we talk about swords and sandals, I mean, could be interpreted in many, many, many ways. Mm. We're talking about those films with it could be Romans or Greeks or Cleopatra or who knows. Let's get into this and we'll see. We'll see where this takes us. Your number five, Josh.
My number five is Conan the Barbarian.
Which version?
Of course, the original.
The 82.
Man.
Okay, like, good. Yeah.
Jesus.
It's a little higher on my list.
Yes, of course it is. Now,
I think we may be vaulting.
All of my list are all based around kind of the fantasy style things, because when it comes to sword and sandals films, it's always my favorite part. It's always my favorite type.
Yep.
Is that it's essentially it works for me because I like a little bit of mysticism in this kind of a thing. Like I like to be. It was a time of very strange things happening. Like, mm-hmm. and I love the concept that we have of these multiple gods and that they interact with humans, but it's more of like they do it on two levels. They do it as gods, but then they also do it as humans, things like this. These sort of things have always fascinated me. It was my favorite part of school, was learning all these things. So Conan the Barbarian is just it's just that great fantasy nonsense. It's just a big buff dude in a world that is actually probably a lot more smarter than he is, but he's just crafty enough to get his way through. Like, he's exactly what he should be. He's a part thief, part warrior, and nothing surprises him. And I love that kind of a concept.
Yes, I've always liked the ingenuity of Conan. He's always been a great survivor.
Yeah.
That's very good. No, as I said, it's a little bit higher on my list, but my number five is going to be the 1965 film, The Greatest Story Ever Told. I think it's right there in the title, don't you? Never has a film boasted so much in its title. This, of course, is a story of Jesus Christ, but it has lots of Roman soldiers and togas, and it's just a big, grand, epic scope. But let's not forget that it also has a very young John Wayne in the very last scene going, "He really is the Son of God." So yes, no, I look, A Greatest Story Ever Told is always fun. Camp, yes, but a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of campness on my list, Dave. Be prepared for that.
Oh no, I think we're both there. Okay, you're number four.
Well, it's funny you say that because I don't think you're there with me, quote unquote, on this one. My number four is The Scorpion King. It's dumb.
I'm very aware
it's dumb, but it's a fuckload of fun. And there's something about The Rock doing anything like that. I was just waiting for the People's Elbow to come out. The guy's just like running around, beating up dudes, and just getting really hardcore on people. And I just had so much fun. I've rewatched that film so many times, it's not funny.
And that's fair enough. I know a lot of people who do like it. And I do actually have a copy of it. I have seen it a couple of times. It is very camp.
It's very camp and it's very stupid.
I think I can out-camp you, though.
Oh, God. Here we go.
How about 1960s Spartacus? My number four, 1960s Spartacus. And when we talk about camp, we can't miss the scene where Tony Curtis and Laurence Olivier are in the bath talking about oysters. Spartacus is a great film. It's actually the film that I think Stanley Kubrick hates the most out of his entire oeuvre of films. But I actually really like it. I saw the restored version at the cinema back when they released it, and I thought, wow, this is really just splendid. It looks beautiful. And of course, it gave us the famous, "I'm Spartacus."
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm Spartacus. No, I really like the 1960 Spartacus, especially in its restored form.
Yeah.
Your number three.
My number three, man, is the new Prince of Persia film that came out.
Yeah, I think you just out-camped me again.
Look, dude, I know. I really do. Okay? I know it's stupid.
Yep.
I'm aware of that. And I'm aware that even though it is really stupid and it's really camp, I went back and rewatched it a week or two ago, and I just went, you know what? This is a hell of a lot of fun. And that's it's reality is all I can say to it. It is just really good fun. I have the dialogue is sometimes silly and camp, but the characters are all buying in on it. It's not particularly deep, but it's a Bruckheimer film.
Hmm.
And I'm always a sucker for his films.
Well, I didn't hate it either. And I actually saw it twice at the cinema because I took my son to see it as well.
Mm.
And, yeah, no, I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was particularly good, but I didn't hate it. I thought the action stuff is good. It's the surrounding story that was the problem that I had with that film. But, no, I didn't hate it. You're right. Jerry Bruckheimer crafts fun entertainments.
Yes,
this is exactly what it was trying to be. My number three is Conan Barbarian. I think you've already summed this up for us. I think it is the 1982 Conan. I think we may have just vaulted it. But I also think that it is a perfect example of its genre.
No, I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, if you set out to make films about big barbarians swinging swords, this is pretty much the perfect film, you know, for what it is. Your number two.
My number two is Clash of the Titans, the original.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I watched this recently, and you are to thank for this, but between an amazingly bad-looking Kraken and Harry Hamlin's nipples... This film,
big saucer nipples.
Oh, dude, they are mesmerizing, and I will never forget them. And you know what? It's amazing. It's just fun.
You know, for a PG-rated film, that film had a serious amount of boobage in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. And boobage and butt. There you go. See, it's not the 80s anymore, is it?
No, it's not.
Couldn't get away with that film today. My number two is 300.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed 300. I think I enjoyed 300 more than you did. But I saw 300 at the cinema a couple of times, actually, back when I was in the States in 2007. Yeah. Really enjoyed it. Like Zack Snyder's visual style. I actually prefer 300 to Immortals. This personal preference. And I just think it really was just a really stylish and slick film. I really liked it.
Yeah. So. No, I can understand that.
Hmm. It's probably our last great hope for Zack Snyder, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see after Superman comes out.
It's not looking good.
It's not looking good at this point, no. Your number one. Let's bring this around the corner. What is your number one? Okay.
My number one, 300.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's weird because it's like I bag it out on a regular basis, but realistically, when it comes to anything swords and sandals, it's the first place my mind goes.
Yeah.
No matter how hard I've tried to shake it, no matter how hard I've tried to replace it with something else, realistically, it is the number one title for me when it comes to just violence, blood, gore, and just that kind of a world.
Yep. But let's face it, this film coined a new phrase.
Mm.
When this film came out, they started calling it war porn.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's all it is. It is porn for your eyes. It is it is violence, gore, action, war porn. It really is. It's just amazing.
Damn right.
Amazing to watch. With one also amazingly beautiful sequence with the Oracle.
Where yes.
They're doing it to music and she's floating there and all her gowns are floating in midair. Just beautiful. Stunning to look at. That's the sort of thing I would expect in a Tarsem film. Anyway, my number one, it wasn't 300 purely on the grounds that... I got to get the right year here because there's been several versions, and we got to make sure we get the right version. 1959 is the version. It's the William Wyler version of Ben-Hur. There is no bigger swords and sandals film than Ben-Hur, quite frankly. No, there isn't. This is the famous saying, bigger than Ben-Hur. You know what I mean? Because here's a film that is so big that at the time, it was the most expensive film ever made. At the time, it won more Oscars than any other film in history. It is even shot in a format that can only be shown in like three cinemas in the world because it is so wide and shot on such a wide scope that even its aspect ratio can't be shown to its full extent unless you're in these certain cinemas. This film is big. Have I said how big this film is?
No, you did.
And by today's standards, we look at it and go, wow, it's kind of camp. But we forget, in 1959, no film like this had ever come out. This was designed for one of those big old curved Cinerama screens, which we don't even have anymore. You know what I mean? This was a big, epic, they call it a tale of the Christ. But really, it wasn't about the Christ. It's kind of a subplot running in the background. This is about Judah Ben-Hur and about his, you know, going from being a slave. It's kind of what, if you think about it, it's what Gladiator kind of, you know, borrowed from heavily. Because, you know, he's a nobleman who goes into being a slave, who goes on to being a gladiator, you know, in the chariot races, and, of course, you know, becomes the hero at the end. Huge film, camp as hell. With some of the campiest dialogue ever put on screen. There's actually a scene in it where Charlton Heston's talking to the other guy, and you're overpoweringly just want to scream at the screen, just kiss him already. Because that's what it feels like. Have you seen Ben-Hur on the big screen?
Not on the big screen. No.
Oh, we need to get you to a cinema to see this on the big screen. It is a.
I don't think it's playing in general release right now, but we might be able to. It's not, but
it shows up at some of those little cinemas. I know that the Astor in Melbourne shows it fairly regularly. They show it. They have seasons of it because it is something to just behold on the big screen, like Spartacus, like 2001. If you get a chance to see these older films in their big, glorious widescreen splendor on the big screen, it is something to see. So I think if you're going to talk about Sword and Sandals films, Ben-Hur is the big boy in town. You know what I mean?
Wow.
He's like he's like the granddaddy, grandpappy of them all. There were a couple of honorary mentions, things I was going to bring up, but I ended up dropping them off my list at the last minute. Life of Brian was one that I was thinking about putting on there. There's a lot of Romans running around in that. The other one I was thinking about putting on there, but I didn't, was Jason and the Argonauts. Some of those early Sinbad films were a lot of fun, but I didn't do any of those either. And there was also one more, and it's gone out of my head. I was thinking about putting Troy on there. Not that it was a great film, but it was huge. Big battles, Brad Pitt running around in a loincloth, you know, that sort of stuff. But I didn't. Nice. I didn't. I held it off. And I think because The Better Sense got hold of me, because it really isn't that great a film.
No.
Troy is one of those really heartbreaking films where you sit there and go, it should have been great, and it's not.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. All right, well, we're going to get out of here, Josh. I think we're done.
All right, man. Sounds good.
All right, so if you've got feedback, agree or disagree with any of us, want to suggest a list of five, we always like suggestions. So you can send us an email at feedback@filmactually.com, or you can drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167, or our Skype ID is just geekactually, all one word. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr accounts, to go and follow anything, basically, that we do. You just go to geekactually.com and there's a follow us button right there. And it'll have everything on there. And if you want to find this show on iTunes, just search for Film Actually on iTunes and you'll find it. And please leave us some feedback, quite frankly, on iTunes, because we'd like to push the numbers up a bit more. I should also mention very quickly that we have a second podcast going out at the moment called Behind the Panels, which is brand new and needs some love. So go over and subscribe to that in iTunes and please leave some feedback. We're trying to get that up into new and noteworthy. Numbers-wise, it's doing really quite remarkably well. I was very surprised. But we still haven't received any feedback on iTunes yet. So jump in there. Josh, where can people find out more about you?
Well, you all know that I am at rawdlc.com, which is a gaming website. We have a ton of content coming out over this week. I can guarantee there is a post every single day this week, which will have something interesting to look at, and a whole bunch of reviews for stuff that's coming out at the moment. And there's some Studio 33 videos rolling out, which, if people don't know what those are, they are high production videos of us looking at games. They are hilarious. I would advise you guys to check out the Assassin's Creed one, which is chocka full of really hilarious splicings of movie quotes, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, etc. Of course, that has no relevance to Assassin's Creed, but that's what makes it great.
Fair enough. We also should give a quick shout out to our good friend and usual co-host, but he's not here today. Richard Gray can be found over at therealbits.com or on Twitter at @DVDBits. He's at the, said before, he's at the Japanese Film Festival, so he couldn't be here today. Next week, we must remind people that we are doing Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1. And we have a very special guest coming into the studio, which is Robin Smith, who actually wrote our wonderful opinion pieces over the last few months about all of the Twilight films, and they are very funny. You should go check those out. And she is actually already written. The new Twilight film inspired her so much, she's already written her opinion piece.
Wow.
And she's sending it over to me today. So she says, interesting things to talk about. That's what that were her exact words. Wow. So next week we'll be doing that. So make sure you catch us on what is it? Mondays we release this show. So next Monday you'll be able to catch that one. Charlie and Brad are back. Go check out reboundradio.com. They've got a bunch of podcasts that are really cool. Check out weekendronin.com for the real junkies. They do a podcast that's a lot of fun too. R-E-E-L. Find it on iTunes. And Josh Spencer, our fantastic cartoonist. We can't let a show go by without mentioning attackninja.blogspot.com. Go check out his artwork. Now, we opened the show, as we said before, with the 1981 Clash of the Titans. And that was Laurence Olivier saying, release the Kraken. And we are going to close the show. I couldn't get the soundtrack for Immortals yet. So I thought we need something in the same sort of vein. So I've sourced out a track by Ramin Djawadi called Release the Kraken from the remake of Clash of the Titans. So it's not a particularly good film, but it's actually got some good music in it. So we're going to go out with Release the Kraken by Ramin Djawadi from the remake of Clash of the Titans. Josh, have you got anything to add?
No.
No, in that case, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week with Twilight. Bye, Josh.
Bye.